overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Have a beautiful week.
Thank you for joining us, those of you who are here at the center with your masks on, and for those of you in virtual world. I so honor the fact that we have this other extended audience. I was in satsang on Wednesday night and I got trapped in a virtual nightmare. I couldn't get back into the satsang, but I was somehow still there. And so for those of you who have the technical skills to tap into this, I honor you and I respect you. And I know that you are blessed, even though you can't be here in form, you're here in essence. We had a beautiful revealing service this morning and individuals were reflecting on family members who are no longer here in form, but who are still here in essence. And that truly is the message of Easter Sunday, is that spirit was never born and spirit never dies. And we are a spiritual being having a human experience. And when we can embrace our humanity, we can know our divinity. It's almost counterintuitive. It's not about searching for the divinity, but it's about really being fully human. And in that, we find the divinity was right there at the core of our being. So it's with gratitude in my heart that I enter into a principle. And you know, there's a beautiful saying in the science of mind that says, principle is not bound by precedent. And we're dealing with spiritual principles all the time. Cause and effect. The principle of the grateful heart has a more profound, fulfilling experience. And when you realize you're dealing with principles, could we then elevate this dynamic that we celebrate today, the resurrection, as a principle that is relevant to all of us? In The Science of Mind, Dr. Ernest Holmes says, we must have our own resurrection. And the resurrection is the birth of this new order of being, this awakened self, this Buddha consciousness, this Christification of humanity, and it's right there right now. So my neighbors in Five Points, they have little crucifixes in their yard, and it started off, they had a purple bandana wrapped around the crucifix. But then on Good Friday, I noticed that the purple bandana became a black one. And Trey said, that's the day the crucifixion happened. I said, the symbology. I'm wondering if on Easter morning they're going to put the purple one back or if the scarf will change its color. But then I realized that that isn't my metaphor. That isn't the reference point upon which I explore the deeper understanding of what this principle of resurrection is within all of us. And so this morning in my office, I was looking around all the effigies of the great world religions. Behind me, you see Shiva, the dancing god, the god of creation and destruction. Shiva exists within all of us. We're always ending and beginning. You might say that could be the resurrection principle. Right next is Barbara Rowland's beautiful St. Francis of Assisi, who embodied the Christ, if you will. Through his own suffering, he recognized that this presence exists within all of us. And he developed the whole Franciscan order, where he embraced Brother Sun and Sister Moon, not as something to have dominion over, but as an aspect of ourselves. And then, of course, you have the Buddha consciousness, which is right there next to St. Francis and Shiva. And the Buddha consciousness would be the Christ awakening within us. It's the same thing. On my Zen calendar this morning, it was quoting the Buddha, who said, we don't learn by experience. We learn by our capacity to experience. So could we explore this capacity to have a deeper understanding of this presence that's within all of us, that awakens when it's ready to awaken, that's there from the time we were born, the time we were in the womb, to the time we make our transition, and it is the same presence that we all share. Wow, then life becomes so intimate because we realize there is no spot where God is not. There is no place where this Christ presence can't be experienced intimately. So what is our capacity to have a greater realization of truth? You know, it said, if you want the truth, you must want it as much as the drowning man wants that gasp of air. And we are a community of truth seekers. All over the city of Huntsville, and I would say all over our country, there are many people worshiping the man Jesus. I went to get my prescription filled at the pharmacy, and I asked the lady behind the glass wall with her mask on, I said, how much I appreciate the frontline workers. And I said, how are you doing there? And she says, well, I got me some Jesus this weekend, and I'm all better. And I said, well, good for you. You got yourself some Jesus. I says, I'm not going to give you any Jesus today, other than to say that he was the great example of someone who is embodying this Christ presence. And if you will, I've been exploring the Apostle Paul, who never met Jesus, but who said, let that Christ be in you, which was in him. So he was speaking a higher order of truth to those. And after Jesus's crucifixion and the idea of having your own resurrection, the harsh reality there is you also have to have a crucifixion if you want to have a resurrection. And so I was sitting here on Saturday with my little journal, reflecting on what needs to be crucified in me and what needs to be resurrected. Could I crucify the reactive David and resurrect the responsive David? Could I crucify the drop in the ocean and resurrect the whole ocean in me? Could I crucify the cloud of my separateness in the sky of being and know that I am the actual sky of being? Could I crucify, what did I write down here? The idea of me as separate and resurrect the idea of the one life, God's life, revealing itself as me, as you, as all creation. That's a huge step from the finite self, from the local mind, to the non-local or infinite mind. And that's the invitation this Sunday morning, is to go deeper into the truth. And you know what the truth is like for me? Is that it expands. It keeps getting bigger. It gets more interesting. And it reveals itself in more fascinating ways. So I invite you to come back and we'll play. We'll undress the idea of the crucifixion today, and we'll explore what the crucifixion or the resurrection principle is in all of us. I resurrected the crucifix from my office that my little sister gave me when I started ministry 32 years ago. She wanted me to make sure I kept Christianity at the forefront, and I kept this in the corner of my office. But this morning I brought it up because this is not the symbol of Jesus' death. If it were the symbol of Jesus' death and he were hanged, they'd put a noose around your neck. If he died through the guillotine, we'd have a thing around our neck. No, no. This is an ancient, ancient symbol of the vertical reality, the eternal now, cutting through a time-space continuum. And Sylvia is wearing the Celtic cross, which has a circle in the center, which reminds you that we only experience the present moment. So when you see it like that, then this cross is reminding you to be here now, to be love now, to be the Christ that you are now, that all there is the Christ. It wasn't Jesus's second name. It is a level of consciousness. It's the awakened presence of love, which we all share. And when you find yourself being loving and compassionate and peace-filled, you can pretty much conclude that something is awakening within you. We're doing this wonderful class, Pema Chodron, a Buddhist nun, who teaches living beautifully with uncertainty and change, knowing that change is inevitable. But for my friend Terry over there, the choice is always ours. I pulled that book out. I was thinking of giving it to you, Terry, but it's way too big and way too complicated. But I'm going to pull out their idea of what the resurrection is. In all the world's religions, they speak of this principle that exists. It's not something that happened 2,000 years ago when a man physically arose from the dead. That's literally impossible. Bishop Spong, the Anglican minister, said, if Jesus physically erected 2,000 years ago, he would be somewhere up there around Pluto by now. He says we've got to let go of this infantile way of thinking and acknowledge what that resurrection was. It was the resurrection of spirit, that spirit never died. So here in this lovely compilation of the world's great religions, here's what she describes what resurrection is. The church, like all its members, relapses from the new into the old being. Therefore, the third mark of the new creation is And he says, RE-surrection, resurrection. And he says, resurrection is not an event that might happen in some remote future, but it is the power of a new being, all capital letters, to create life out of death. Here and now, today and tomorrow, where there is a new being, there is a resurrection. Where there is a new being, there is a resurrection. So could we, in that admonition saying, behold, I make all things new, could we have a new order of being within ourselves? A more compassionate, a more loving. Every time I teach a class, even this Pema Chodron class, I'm realizing it's not about reacting from the Shempa, from the stuff that triggers you, but it's about responding. And so we have learned a simple practice that Pema Chodron taught. She says, no matter, and you're going to be going to family reunions today, and God knows what you're going to experience. Pema Chodron said, here's the three things you get to do. Be fully present with what is. Don't run away from it. Don't attack it. Just be present with whatever's happening. And she says, place your hand on your heart because you're moving into that compassionate place, and then act, whatever that action might be. Speak the truth with love. If it's not acceptable to you, then say it from an I statement. I'm not comfortable when there's a lot of fighting on at the dining room table. I can remember when we would have family gatherings, inevitably there'd be some family crisis and there'd be screaming at the dining room table. It almost made you not want to go home for Thanksgiving or Easter because that was the nature of my family. But then again, when I was young, that's how we were. At 72, I don't think I would be that way. I think I would respectfully say, I'm going to take my turkey leg and eat outside. We did many at Easter at the Rowlands farm. And you know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. You sit out there with the cows and have communion. He says, where there is a new being, there is a resurrection, namely the creation into eternity out of every moment of time. We're collapsing time and we're moving into eternity. We're moving into that time that was never born and never dies. Paul is still here with us. Joe is still here with us. Your mother is still here with us. Where would they go? So the message of resurrection is that we don't die, that we're spiritual, eternal beings. And Jesus was the example of that. Rocco Errico, an Aramaic scholar, came to the center here, and he told me that his understanding of the resurrection is that Jesus resurrected in the hearts of the apostles. They began to feel his presence. And if you've ever been around someone who's made their transition, and if you're crazy like me, you feel their presence is always with you. I promise, if I should go before you, I'm going to haunt all of you. So just be attentive if I should come in. You feel me in your heart? It's because I'm there, Susan. I never went anywhere. So could we play with this idea of the Christification of humanity in a playful sort of way? One of my favorite cartoons when I was a brand new minister was that of a caterpillar going along with another caterpillar, and they see a butterfly overhead. And caterpillar number one says to caterpillar number two, you ain't going to get me in one of them things. Denying his own transformation, his own inevitability. And if you ever look into the science of metamorphosis, like a simple caterpillar becoming a butterfly, they create a cocoon. And in that cocoon, the caterpillar becomes liquid, liquid. And then with these imaginal cells and with this knowing, with this entelechy, with this inner knowing, just like the acorn knows how to be an oak tree, within that liquid something, with the liquid caterpillar, starts forming this winged being, which when it is strong enough, has to have the strength to eat out of the cocoon to give it the strength to fly and have a whole nother order of being. It's no longer eating the leaf, but it's drinking the nectar from the flower, and it's looking for the right and perfect other butterfly to mate, to lay eggs, and to make their transition. What a beautiful example of spirit. So what if that's our opportunity, is to come through whatever it is, to leave the identification of the false self, of the little me, and awaken to our true nature. You know, my beloved Terry daughter over here, she's having these experiences of oneness with her cat. How lovely. And then you begin to find you're going even crazier when you have oneness with a tree, or oneness with a plant, or oneness with a worm. And it all begins to speak to you because they're all sentient beings. They're all aspects of the one life. And then everything becomes sacred. So I decided to undress this idea of resurrection by turning to a sannyasin from India, who was a Benedictine monk who went to India and he never left. And so he became a holy man. His name was Bede Griffiths. And he talks about resurrection in a Hindu sort of way, because it's all, truth is universal. It's incontrovertible. And so he talks about renunciation as death. And I thought this was a beautiful way of exploring it. First, I want to share with you how he describes that Christ presence that's underneath, that emerges. And it's such a beautiful way. He says, if we could go down into the depths of any being, into a grain of sand, a leaf, a flower, we should come upon the same eternal mystery. I hope you hear this, little Terry girl. Beyond the molecules and the atoms, beyond the protons and the electrons, beyond the living cell with its genes and its chromosomes, there is an energy. There is a force of life which is continually welling up from the abyss of being in what he calls the Father, or the Brahman, the one life, you know, the something that we all share. The Atman and the Brahman are one. Brahman is the eternal presence, and the Atman is the way it appears in you and me, the soul. So he says, beyond the molecules and atoms, the genes and chromosomes, there is this energy, this force of life, which is continually welling up from the abyss of being in the Father, continually springing up into the light of the Word, continually flowing back to its source, which is in the bliss of love. My friend Terry Boy was talking about Tonglen, the Buddhist practice of breathing in the pain. What if you knew that even in the pain, the love is there? And so we can breathe in the love and let out the radiance, but we can also bring in the pain and breathe out the radiance. He's saying the same thing. That mystery of something is within all, this divine love. And he calls this the divine Satchitananda. That's a Sanskrit word. Sat means truth. Chit means consciousness. Ananda means bliss. So truth being bliss. Consciousness being bliss. That's this Christ presence. You can call it whatever you want. It wells up. The divine Satchitananda, or the Holy Trinity, the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, all within us, lies at the heart of every creature. That means the cow in Barbara Rowland's pasture. It means the chicken that showed up on Gigi's door with three kittens under her wings. It's all the divine presence. Satchitananda, the self, smaller than the small, as the Upanishads say, greater than the great. It's hidden in the heart of every creature. Boy, that talk about the universal Christ. A man who is free from desires and free from grief sees the mystery of the self by the grace of his Creator. And this mystery is hidden in the heart of every being, but we fail to see it. You fail to see it because first you have to find it in here. And when you find it in here, you see it everywhere out there. Dr. Ernest Holmes says, love sees only love. But he said, only love sees love. So the implication is we have to discover the love within ourselves. And when we find the love in here, we're going to see love everywhere, just revealing itself. You know, I have this garden, and she is breathtaking. You talk about, you know, in the beginning, the Bible starts with a place called Eden. Eden is a consciousness of bliss. Same thing, Satchitananda. The end of the Bible is New Jerusalem, a consciousness of bliss. So the Bible is a metaphor for our journey. We start off in bliss, then we eat from the tree of judgment. Get it, Terry? From the tree of good and evil, then we leave the garden. We can't be in bliss anymore because we're in judgment. And then the rest of the Bible are these stories about waking up, waking up. Jacob had to fight an angel in order for him to change to Israel, which means the awakened presence. Same idea, resurrection. Dying to the identity as Jacob, resurrecting as Israel. Isis, Ra, Elohim. Isis, the male god, Isis, the feminine god, Ra, the male god, and Elohim, the universal god, Israel. So what if these are stories of resurrection? It's a principle that's universal, and it's revealed in all spiritual paths. Hey, Miss Serena Sage. Welcome on Easter Sunday. Fashionably late, as always. I remember once saying to Lois Pride, you've got lateness in your consciousness, because she'd always walk down the aisle 15 or 20 minutes into my sermon, and she took umbrage at that. But, you know, some people have lateness in their consciousness. I just happen to be perennially early. So here's how B. Griffiths describes this idea of the resurrection, which is so beautiful. Did I circle? Yeah. He says, no one is secure from the illusion except he who has died to the false self, and the Christ awakens, can say then, the world has been crucified to me, and I to the world, and I am no longer I who live, but rather Christ who lives in me. Jesus would say, I of myself do nothing. It's this Father within that doeth the work. So we stop identifying as the doer. And the Bhagavad Gita says, you are not the doer. You know, this presence is the doer. And then he says, let go of any attachment to an outcome, because that's only the ego that has an attachment to an outcome. Divine love doesn't. And so when you show up and things look completely different, it's because divine love's in charge. You're not in charge. You're not in control. It's a whole different way of approaching life. So he says, but what happens when we have died to the world? Now he says, be grateful that you have to die to the world and all of its materialism, all its grasping. You have to die to eros or to the flesh, all that lust, wanting more and more and more pleasure, more whatever. And then you have to die, and the hardest of all is die to the ego. And that's the identity that sees us as separate from other. That's the persona, the mask that we wear. And that has to fall away because the mask isn't real. What's real is what's underneath it. In the Sufism, they talk about we have 70,000 masks that we identify with. But after a while, when the masks fall away or the veils fall away, what's underneath the veil? It's the same Christ. It's the same presence. It's the same Satchitananda. It's the same love. And that's what he's saying here. Die to the world, die to the flesh. And he uses the word renounce. Renounce the world. The world doesn't have my good. Jesus would say, why lay up your treasure in the world where moth and rust do corrupt? He says, rather lay up your treasure in the kingdom within you. You know, so he's pointing you to this Christ presence that's within. It's always been within. What happens when we've died to the world, the flesh, and the ego, when we have seen through the illusion and faced ultimate reality? Why then we begin to live in the real world? Then we begin to live in the real world when we're no longer attached to it. Then we begin to live in the real flesh and the real self. And this, he says, is the paradox which is so difficult for most people to understand. It is only when you've renounced the world that you really can enjoy the world. The world doesn't have, I say over and over again, stop putting yourself in debt to the world. Put yourself in debt to the universe. The world doesn't owe you anything, but the universe owes you everything. Sylvia will appreciate this. Raymond Charles Barker would say, always, always speak well of yourself. He says that's socially incorrect, but it's spiritually imperative because we're acknowledging that what we are is this divine presence. It's not about me. It's not about my stuff. And when you stop identifying as your stuff, then you're free to enjoy. I love this beautiful center that we've created over the years with the yantras in the window. I found myself walking around the garden, and there were these irises that Wanda Gale had gathered from the farm that she lived in a little place in the middle of Alabama. And she gave me these irises that she knew as a little girl, and they're back there, and they're full bloom now. And so every spring, they seem to always bloom on Resurrection Sunday. I bring those irises in, and I feel the connection to her mother, to her roots. It's all connected. So it is only when you've renounced the world that you can really enjoy the world. Yesterday I was driving around Neighborhood Watch and I saw these two women standing in my garden sniffing the flowers. And it was Pam Hurdy and Robin Fulford. And they had come over to experience the spiritual orgasm of my flowering garden, going from flower to flower to flower. And before you knew it, I have like 10 camellias that are in full bloom. They left with armloads of camellia blossoms, pink ones and yellow ones and white ones and doubles and singles. And Pam sent me this tableau on her table with all the overflowing camellias saying, this was such good medicine for my soul to just be in the garden that was resurrecting. You know, every year I wonder if they're going to come back. And sure enough, these strange plants come out of the soil, plants that I'd forgotten that were even there. That's the resurrection story. You think it's dead, but it's not. So, renounce the world and you can experience the world. Renounce the flesh and you'll know the flesh even more intimately. Renounce your ego and you'll know it as a playful friend. It is only when you've renounced the flesh that you can take pure delight in your flesh. It's only when you've renounced yourself that you can discover your true being. And this has been proved over and over again throughout history. All the great cultures of the world, whether they're Chinese, Indian, Islamic, or Christian, were built on this one simple principle. It's the resurrection principle. It's not an event that happened 2,000 years ago. It's this new being that's awakening within all of us. You know, I'm sitting here looking at faces that I've known for 32 years. The same people that were sitting in the chairs, their hair was darker then, but they're still here, so many of them, or I'd say a handful of them. And they've stayed consistent in a spiritual practice for a very long time. And what I've witnessed, when you make a commitment to the evolution of your soul, to the growth of who you are, it shows. Robert Tom is not the same Robert Tom that I knew back there when he was a married man with a lovely redheaded wife. Now he's like a little mystic who just radiates love. And I don't know what happened to him, but I sense that he's evolved and grown. And there's my beloved Susan, who was a married lady when I met her. And now she's a happy single gal, just radiating love, visited her mother's grave this morning. And we talked about her mother is still with her. How we get to experience a deeper order of being. That's what the resurrection is all about. It's not about you anymore. It's about God. So thank you, Bede Griffith. I never met him in form. When I went to the Parliament of the World Religions in 1993, they were doing a memorial service for this man who sounded like a saint. And I never met him, but ever since I went to that memorial service, I feel his presence. Isn't that funny? So what is he telling me? He said, I'm still here, and you were ready, and I had to come after you, even when I wasn't in form, to inspire you with my love. And when this Franciscan monk or Benedictine monk, whatever, Jesuit, Sunyasin guy, his last book was all about a reverence for the mother. He'd gone from Father God to Mother God. He'd had his shift, his resurrection, and he began to see it all as all the divine feminine. And then you hear Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas. He says, when the above becomes the below, when the within becomes the without, when the male and female become as one, then you will enter the kingdom of heaven. He's not talking about two genders. He's talking about the animus and the anima, the female aspect of our being, which is receptive and nurturing, and the anima, or the animus, the masculine aspect of our being, which is more assertive and more productive and proactive. They come together in us. You know, I find myself really loving very strong women and very soft men when they can have that balance. Joe was a very soft man, and Sylvia was a strong woman, and somehow the animus and the anima came together and created this beautiful dance. So what if we could play with this resurrection principle throughout our whole life and ask ourselves, what needs to die so that something else can be born? You know, is there a relationship in your life that is unskillful, that unskillfulness needs to die so that a more skillful way of relating can happen? It's all our creation. We're caused to our own experience. That's the most beautiful thing I think about Science of Mind gave me the years ago. Nobody does anything to us. And so when we can meet cause to our own experience, then we're always at choice point, Terry. Here's the big, the choice is always ours. Choose you this day who you shall serve, God or mammon, right there in the Bible. What are we going to serve? Are we going to serve this divine loving presence, the Christ, the Buddha consciousness, the awakened life, the Satchitananda? Or are we going to serve the world, the materialism? Are we going to serve our ego? Are we going to serve our fleshly needs and desires and wants? When we renounce those things, strangely enough, we have more material things than we ever needed. You know, I feel like I've got more material stuff than I could ever hope to ever enjoy in this one lifetime. And so at this stage of life, I'm giving things away. You know, I told Adam, I said, unfortunately, my little spiritual son is going to get all my plants. And I've had most of these plants most of my life. And who else would take care of them but this crazy guy over here? And he's looking forward to it. So yeah, so I was thinking about the butterfly. In my garden, I have a plant called the resurrection lily, appropriately named. And this is a very strange plant. Sylvia knows the surprise lily, which is a cousin of the resurrection lily. And this plant comes up now. She's just very lush. And she's green and she's perched. She's one of the first to come up, and I've got just huge patches. She naturalizes throughout my garden. But then when it comes June, she dies back. You don't see her at all. And then comes September, all of a sudden these things come out of the ground like this. And then they open with these beautiful pink flowers. And that's the resurrection. She has her life where she puts the photosynthesis into the bulb. Then she loses the life. She goes dormant. And when conditions are right, as the Buddha says, things manifest. And out of the clear blue, these beautiful flowers, ergo the name Resurrection Lily. So could we have our own resurrection? You get to name whatever that looks like in your life, to bring life back into your life, to bring some sense of purpose and meaning. You know, the soul wants to find meaning in life, whereas the ego wants to find status and material things. So could we pursue purpose and meaning? What brings meaning and purpose to your life? A young lady came to the revealing service, and she tends to be a little sad and down sometimes, but she grows seeds like gangbusters. And every time she starts talking about the seeds, her whole demeanor lights up. So what if she's finding her connection to life through growing a few seeds in her basement and then nurturing them and then planting them outside? She even grows seeds for the butterflies to nest on so that then she can cultivate a butterfly garden. And though she may not have a lot of human relationships, she has these intimate relationships with even the least of these. So yes, I wanted to do Raoul, my best friend over here, Richard Rohr. His brand new book is called The Universal Christ. I was going to teach this, but it's way too Christian for me. And yet, having said that, he talks about the Christ consciousness that we all share in a way that I don't think anybody else can do it. So I want to give you his beautiful take on the resurrection. He's an inspiration for me. This is Richard Rohr. He talks about the Apostle Paul as the one who spoke the truth. And he takes on organized religion who think that the crucifixion is something that only happened to Jesus and that he rose from the dead. He talks about it as a principle and how the Apostle Paul spoke about that, let that Christ be in you which was in him. And so he goes on to reiterate what that would look like. This is a Franciscan monk. He says, resurrection is presented by Paul as the general principle of reality. The general principle of reality. He does not argue from a one-time anomaly of something that happened 2,000 years ago and then ask us to believe in this Jesus miracle, which most Christians, I would say today, are eager to do. You know, when I was a young boy, the one day we had to go to church, raised Lutheran and Episcopal. Dad was Episcopal, mother was Lutheran. We went to church twice a year, Christmas, and the most important was Easter. And this was in the 60s and 50s. My two sisters would wear their Easter bonnet. It was imperative. And we would study the stations of the cross. You know, when Jesus dropped the cross and the man helped him lift it, and when he's on the cross and he asks for water. And I didn't find out until I was a minister when I was up in Boston in the North End having an Italian lunch that there was a huge cathedral in Boston called St. Leonard's Cathedral. And Trey, my husband, being so enamored of the name St. Leonard, he went to the church and he pounded on the door. And he said, do you have a t-shirt that says St. Leonard's Cathedral? He wanted to buy me the t-shirt. So we ended up going into the cathedral, and St. Leonard was the saint that created the Stations of the Cross. And I thought, holy cow. And there were the stations all through the cathedral, all about the crucifixion, all what happened before he resurrected. Now he's saying, let's go beyond that idea into a deeper principle. So here's the principle, according to Richard Rohr. He said, the Jesus miracle which most Christians are eager to do, we're not doing. Instead, Paul names the cosmic pattern that's revealed. And he says in many places throughout his letters, Spirit is carried in our hearts. Spirit is carried in our hearts. And he goes on to say this. Resurrection is another word for change, but particularly positive change, which we tend to see only in the long run. In the short run, it often really looks like a death. You know, when a relationship ends, my beloved Susan over here, it looked like a death at the time, but it was really a resurrection. Could we see everything like that? You know, a job ends and you think you're bereft. What am I going to do now? And then something new unfolds. So it's a new beginning. It's a new sense of me. It's a new sense of self that this principle is pointing to. So particularly a positive change. In the short run, it oftentimes looks like a death. So Jesus, his first incarnate life, his passing over into death, and his resurrection into the ongoing Christ. He didn't say ongoing Christ. That means that Christ is still here. It was Teilhard de Chardin that says what we need is the Christification of humanity to awaken that same presence that awoke in him. So this is what he's saying is the principle. This ongoing Christ life is an archetypal model for the entire pattern of creation. Boy, tell that to your Christian friends. It's an archetypal model that is awakening within all beings, not just Christians. It's a level of consciousness. It's an awakened presence. It's an open-hearted awareness, to quote Terry over there, that awakens when it's ready to awaken. He is a microcosm, Jesus is, for the whole cosmos, or, differently said, he's a map for the whole journey in case you need or want one. He's a map for the journey in case you need or want one. A map. A map points the way. Here's how you get there. You forgive 70 times 7. Here's how you get there. You seek the kingdom within yourself, and then everything is added unto you. Here's how you get there. You judge not, but you judge righteous judgment. Righteous judgment means using judgment righteously as discernment. You know, we're still going to wear masks here, even though I've had both shots. because it's a respectable thing to do at this time. I think it was Gigi or somebody told me, Sylvia, that it's 2 more weeks that I still need to be careful. Well, I plan to still be careful for a long time because that's just, you know, I know my friend Adam over here is going to a huge family Easter gatherings. And I know even though he's had one shot, he's going to be safe because we've had this conversation. So what if it's not a judgment thing, it's a discernment thing, and that's righteous judgment, right use of our judgment. You know, I studied with a sadguru who was very rigid with dietary laws, and I followed those dietary laws. Everything had to be eaten raw. You weren't allowed to eat garlic. You weren't allowed to eat onion. Sugar was poison. Caffeine was toxic. I mean, just about everything that was desirable was taboo. And then I studied with the Sufis, and he said, "You want the cookie? Eat the cookie." It's like, in other words, don't put the devil in the cookie. It's a cookie. You don't have to eat a dozen cookies. You can eat a cookie and still be pre-diabetic and you will survive. So what if we could use righteous judgment with everything that we do? You know, how we are with our pets, how we drive the car, how we are with our environment. I recycle everything. I feel so good about my carbon footprint. There were some flowers that I threw in the trash accidentally, and Trey reprimanded me. He said, "Those need to go in the compost heap." So he pulled the old flowers out of the trash can and put them in the compost heap. "I'm sorry, honey. I forgot. I was refreshing the flowers and accidentally threw them in the trash." No, no, that's not. That was righteous judgment. Sounded like judgment to me, but it was righteous judgment. So what if we get to be playful in how we are in this world during this time of transformation? So let me see. Satsang on Wednesday nights was a classic example of a young woman who had a narrative of struggle with her flesh. She was having, she'd had several brain surgeries, spine surgery, and she says, "My mantra, you know, using positive affirmations was that perfect health is the law of my life. But I realized that mind within me said, 'You're lying. You've never had perfect health.' So could I go beyond that illusory thought and affirm that joy is the law of my life, even when I'm going through brain stuff and spine stuff? I can be joyful and know that underneath that appearance of dis-ease, there is an inner wholeness, a hidden wholeness that is the truth of my being." And so as she's experiencing a little bit of a crucifixion, Gloriji, in her wisdom, gave her this resurrecting idea, which I find very beautiful because it applied to me. She had us all sit there. And, you know, after I had the heart attack, the most powerful moment for me, someone said, "Go out and lie on the earth. Let yourself be embraced by the mother." And I can remember lying on the ground, looking at the sky. I was only 2 days since the heart attack. And I felt this embrace that was so all-consuming of the earth. There's something to this connection to the planet. So in her little visualization, she had us sit there and just imagine this green energy coming up from the earth and spiraling around us, spiraling within us. And I literally felt the earth coming in. And then we had to imagine, now you're working with the imaginal cells, not with your local mind. She said, imagine that the celestial energy is now entering into you. You could say the spirit of the Father, the spirit of the Mother, and the spirit of the Father. And you are the threshold between heaven and earth. And just through the imaginal realm, you begin to experience an expansion. You could say a resurrection. You know, this principle is at work within me. It wasn't about David sitting there struggling with an identity of me. There was this capacity to feel the connection to the Divine Mother, this capacity to feel this opening to this expansive, infinite existence that we all are. You're not separate from existence. And as this journey began, I felt this shift. It was like this new order of being in me. There wasn't this little egoic self that was arguing for a narrative and a story, but there was this something that was being done from within. You could call it the Christ energy, the awakened presence, the loving vibration of the Mother, that something that Bea Griffith speaks about, that ineffable mystery that will come to a kitty cat when it looks at the smoke coming up from a candle because it knows it's connected to everything. Then we don't have to understand it with our intellect. We can actually surrender and allow this thing to happen. A direct experience. You know, satsang, the word means sat is truth, and sang comes from sangha. It's a community that's committed to truth. And what if our religion could be a religion of truth? You know, the truth is that which unhides itself, that's there all along. It's not a localized belief system. It doesn't have belief. All belief arises from the ego. It has a G-N-O-S-I-S. It has a gnosis, a knowing. My beloved Terry girl, she asked me about, she thinks about things, and I said, but go into the gnosis that doesn't think. The gnosis kind of knows, like her cat knows. And then when you're ready to merge with the cat or with a tree, you realize that life knows something that's offering itself up to us. When we're ready to die to a perception that thinks they have all the answers. I went to Ralph Waldo Emerson to see what he might say about the resurrection, and I pulled out his very last sermon. He was a young man, and his last sermon was called The Last Supper. And he did everything but talk about the resurrection. He talked about the misunderstanding of the church when it came to Jesus. And he talked about how Jesus said, "Eat, this is my flesh and this is my blood." He said he was doing a Passover service. He was Jewish. He says, this would never have been what Jesus would have told you to do. He said, this is Emerson. He said, if you followed what Jesus told his apostles to do, he washed their feet. He said, if you really want to do what he wanted, he said, you'd all get down and wash everybody's feet. Of course, he said this kind of tongue in cheek to the people in Boston at the time. He pointed to something bigger that he was pointing to. Could we discover that something bigger within ourselves? And in order to do that, we have to die to the old idea. And so it was his last sermon there. It was called The Last Supper, because he says, I can no longer preach about something that I don't believe in. I want a higher order of being. I want a resurrected truth that makes sense. The very first Sunday I spoke here at the other center, the previous minister who'd been for 2 or 3 years, his name was Lynn Combs. I remember he introduced me and he said, speaking about the resurrection is probably the hardest thing for a New Thought minister to talk about. And you know what? He was wrong. It's my favorite thing to talk about. Because until we have this death to the old self, we can't have this birth of our true nature. And we're always giving birth. It was Meister Eckhart that said, the only begotten, we'll call it the Christ, is ever begetting itself in me now. That's the symbol of the cross. The only begotten is ever begetting itself in me now. And that's why that circle is there. That's right at the core. And you're it. Tag, you're it. So let's go into this beautiful place of the resurrected one. And we can do that by just consciously taking an inhalation and then giving an exhalation and letting go of whatever needs to be released. We release it with love. We can take an inhalation and with our exhalation, renounce the world, our attachment to worldly things. And then realize when we let go of our attachment to the worldly things, we experience the world in such an intimate, sacred way. Let's take an inhalation. And with the exhalation, release, renounce our attachment to ways of the flesh, to the addictive patterns of me. And realize we can still have the cookie. We can still enjoy the caress and hug of a friend. But we're no longer attached. We're no longer driven by the flesh. And now we can breathe in again the sacred breath of spirit. And as we exhale, we can let go of the false self, the me person, that thinks he's separate and special and different. And then on the inhalation, breathe in that sense of connectedness with all life. Like my friend Terry did with her cat, she realized I and the cat are one. I and the plant are one. And as I am loving, the plant feels it. And the plant radiates the love just as well as David radiates the love. And so my friend Terry was telling me about Ram Dass's beautiful radiant meditation where you breathe in the radiance of love, which you could call the Christ consciousness, and you exhale and you radiate that Christ consciousness, that love to the world. It's the same presence. It's not complicated. You breathe in the embrace of the Divine Mother. And you exhale, knowing that the Mother and I are one. You breathe in the heavenly realms. They fill you and you exhale it and you say, the Father and I are one. And you enter into the same experience that Jesus was exampling for all of us, to seek this place, this sacred Satchitananda, this truth, this consciousness, this bliss, which we all share, the one bliss, the one life, the one Christ, the Christification of humanity. Whether you're a Christian or not, it matters not. And so we honor this beautiful resurrection principle this Sunday by having our own resurrection. It's with gratitude that we feel this new order of being alive within us, breathing within us, knowing within us, no longer a bunch of thoughts trying to find a dogma or belief system, but now there is a felt awareness that is open to the meaning of belonging to the one life that is everywhere revealing itself. God's life, our life. And so put your hands over your heart to honor that life. Feel it right there, your capacity to become what you already are. And to this beloved Christ presence within us and all around us, let's say the heart salutation. I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
The Christ in me bows to the Christ in you.
The Christ in me bows to the Christ in you.
We are the Christification of humanity.
We are the Christification of humanity.
And all is well.
All
the time.
All the time.
Now feeling that radiant light within your heart, open your hands, open your eyes, and let the flesh ripple out that light through your eyes, through your smile, through your good intentions. Have a beautiful Easter Sunday. Thank you for showing up, and thanks for sending in your tithes.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You are love and you are light. Namaste.